Okay, yes. So, please.
Well, first of all, I should like to thank you all very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure and a great honor for me to be here. And I should particularly like to thank Jack Pierre for the kind introduction. And perhaps first of all, I should like to apologize for the fact that I'll give the paper in English. The trouble is, I would have loved to give the paper in French, but, well, how shall I phrase it? Je parle français comme une vache espagnole, and listening to a vache espagnole for 60, 70, or 90 minutes would really be a bore for you. And I like French very much, but it's not mutual. French doesn't like me very much. So I hope you will bear with the fact that I present the paper in English. Also, apologies for the fact that I'm not quite my usual buoyant self. I took the train via Kaiserslautern at Metz, and by the time I got off after 5.5 hours, I was completely seasick. I've never had anything like it, and I've just about regained my balance. But seeing so many bright and cheery people really cheers me up a lot. This paper's point of departure is the fact that the term narratology is currently used in at least two quite different senses, whereas some theorists use it quite broadly in a way that makes it more or less interchangeable with narrative studies. Others define narratology in a very narrow sense as, quote, that branch of narrative theory that developed in the 60s and early 70s, mainly in France, largely under the aegis of structuralism and its formless progenitor, end of quote. That was Shlomit Raymond Kenan, another reason why it's very impolite to give the paper in English. After all, narratologie originates from France, but as I said, don't listen to a vache espagnole. The paper mainly pursues three goals: to highlight the differences that distinguish the so-called new narratologies from the structuralist paradigm within which classical narratology, or French narratologie, operated. Second, to give an overview of recent developments in narratology. And third, to provide both a critique of the inflationary use of the term narratology and some very modest proposals for its future usage. After these brief prolegomena, the second part of the paper, you've also got that on the handout, we'll briefly summarize the main differences and tensions between so-called classical narratology and what David Herman has called post-classical narratology. The third provides an overview over recent developments in post-classical narratology, trying to map the various new approaches. The fourth part will then be devoted to a brief critique of the current proliferation of the term narratology, providing modest proposals for its future usage, and a provisional map of the relations between some of the key terms like narrative studies, narrative theory, narratology, and narratological criticism. So let's begin with section number two, narratology or narratologies, differences and tensions. In his brilliant monograph, Constructing Postmodernism, Brian McHale makes an observation that provides an ideal starting point, or perhaps excuse, for anyone who intends to refrain from telling the story of narratology, being convinced that any such attempt is doomed to failure. Quote, lately the tables have turned. Instead of narrative being the object of narratological theory, it is theory that has become the object of narrative. Where once we had theories about narrative, now we begin to have stories about the development of theory. One of the reasons why I am reluctant to provide another story about narratology is that the history of narrative theory arguably contradicts the critical master narratives that have so far been offered. Moreover, any given story about narratology would just trace one of the countless possible plots in a field that has recently turned into a garden of forking paths. So suffice it to say that narratology has arguably benefited from what Currius called the return to history, from what the historian Lawrence Stone has called the revival of narrative, and from the renewed interest in storytelling, both as an object of study and as a mode of scholarly writing. Moreover, a number of wide-ranging changes or turns in literary and cultural theory have been conducive to fostering interest in both narratology and the cultural significances of narratives. These complex changes in the theoretical and critical climate have been dubbed cultural turn, historical turn, anthropological turn, cultural turn, or even narrative or narrativist turn. All of these turns have greatly increased interest in what Jerome Bruner has called the narrative construction of reality, leading to a veritable renaissance of narratology. While the mere systematic and formalist analysis of narrative, which was once the central point of narratology, has more or less gone out of fashion, at least in the US, probably once and for all, narrative theorists have begun to turn their attention to cultural analysis, putting their analytical toolkits to the services of other concerns considered more vital to cultural studies, as Mika Bal put it in an article very tellingly entitled The Point of Narratology. So this is the real question nowadays. What is the point of it all? What is the point of narratology? The recent explosion of activity in the field of narrative studies has resulted in such a proliferation of new approaches in the field of narrative studies and narrative theory that narratology seems to have ramified into narratologies, as David Herman observes. Quote, structuralist theorizing about stories has evolved into a plurality of models for narrative analysis. End of quote. Given the plethora of new narratological approaches, it indeed no longer seems appropriate to talk about narratology as though it were a single approach or a monolithic discipline. As the programmatic use of the plural narratologies in the title of a particularly inspiring collection of essays edited by David Herman in 1999 indicates, there is no longer one capital N narratology. What once looked like a more or less unified structuralist enterprise has branched out into different directions and fields, producing a great diversity of new approaches, many of which display little, if any, family resemblance to their formalist great-grandfather. According to Herman, the differences between structuralist narratology and the new narratologies, which Herman calls post-classical, quote, point to a broader reconfiguration of the narratological landscape. The root transformation can be described as a shift from text-centered and formal models to models that are jointly formal and functional, models attentive both to the text and to the various contexts of stories, end of quote. Herman has also identified another hallmark of post-classical narratology, namely, quote, its abiding concern with the process and not merely the product of narratological inquiry. Stories are not just pre-existent structures waiting to be found by the disinterested observer. Rather, properties of the object being investigated, narrative, are relativized across frameworks of investigation, which must themselves be included in the domain under study, end of quote. In order to highlight the differences that distinguish both a cultural narratology and other new narratologies from the structuralist paradigm within which narratology proper originated and operated, the next figure provides an overview over their main features. I hope you can all see that. Differences, is it?
Yes.
It's not.
It's
not
the same one?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
It's not on the handout.
Okay.
Differences in methodology and general orientation notwithstanding, there are arguably a number of identifiable features that constitute the lowest common denominators of both structuralist narratology, that is, the traditional paradigm, the classical paradigm, and the various new post-classical narratologies. Considering the various facets of the new narratology, the model foregrounds those which bear directly on what sets the new post-classical approaches off from the structuralist or classical paradigm. At the risk of gross oversimplification, let me try to provide a brief sketch of the parallels of concern that the new narratologies seem to share. Although the dichotomous form of the matrix suggests unwarranted assumptions of homogeneity on both sides and does not do justice to the diversity, scope, and complexity of the different approaches subsumed under the wide umbrella classical and post-classical narratologies, the matrix may still serve to highlight some of the new trends that have recently emerged. Differences in methodology and general orientation between the various new approaches notwithstanding, there are arguably a number of identifiable features that constitute the lowest common denominators of the various recent developments in post-classical narratologies. First of all, the development of narratology has followed a course away from the identification and systematization of the properties or features of narrative texts in the direction of a growing awareness of the complex interplay that exists between both texts and their cultural contexts, and between textual features and the interpretive choices and strategies involved in the reading process. Second, classical narratology's preference for describing textual features within a formalist or structuralist paradigm has given way to a general, quote, move toward integration and synthesis, end of quote, that's David Herman again, and towards thicker descriptions, to adapt Clifford Geertz's well-known metaphor. Third, while structuralist narratology was a more or less unified discipline, which was interested mainly in the synchronic dimension of the poetics of narrative, as you all know, of course, evading both moral issues and the production of meaning, most of the new approaches that have been subsumed under the umbrella of the term post-classical narratologies represent interdisciplinary projects which display a keen interest in the changing forms and functions of a very wide range of narratives and in the dialogic negotiation of meanings. Fourth, post-classical narratology tends to focus on issues like context, like culture, like gender, history, interpretation, and the reading process, thereby highlighting those aspects of narrative bracketed, left out by structuralist narratology. Moreover, as far as methodological advances are concerned, Manfred Jahn lucidly summarizes the major changes as follows. Where classical narratology preferred an ahistorical, panchronic vantage, post-classical narratology today actively pursues historical, diachronic lines of inquiry. Where many first-generation narratologists insisted on an elementarist or analytical or combinatorial or bottom-up approach, post-classical narratology today welcomes the uses of synthetic and integrative views. And finally, where classical narratology assumed a retrospective stance, there is an increasing tendency today to pick up the thread of Sternberg's and Perry's exploration into the cognitive dynamics of the reading process. Let me put on the matrix again. Despite the fact that the dichotomies represented in that figure emphasized the contrast between structuralist narratology and the new post-classical approaches, I should like to argue that these dichotomies, these differences, should not be exaggerated. They arguably present us with a set of false choices between either text or context, between form and content, between formalism and contextualism, or between bottom-up analysis and top-down synthesis, and even between neutral description and ideological interpretation or evaluation. The problem with such binarisms is not so much the ingrained structuralist fear that the formalist and descriptivist paradigm will be polluted by the invasion of ideological concerns, as the failure of such rigid distinctions to do justice to the aims and complexities of narrative theory. Even such a basic concept as the event is inevitably subject to interpretation, as Wolf Schmidt, the boss of the Hamburg Narratology Forschergruppe, has shown in a number of very impressive publications. And what is true of basic concepts like the event becomes even more problematic once we turn our attention to complex concepts, like, for instance, the implied author, which for very good reasons Jeanette rejects, or like the unreliable narrator, definitions or discussions of which tend to be situated at the interface between aesthetics and ethics, between poetics and moral concerns and moral values. Moreover, another reason why the dichotomous form of that matrix is questionable is the fact that there never was one capital H narratology in the first place. What we are actually faced with, even in the heyday of structuralism, is not one and only one form of narratology, but arguably rather quite a broad range of different ways of dealing with and conceptualizing narrative. Though from today's vantage point it may look as though what may for convenience sake be called classical narratology was once a more or less unified enterprise, narratology was arguably never a monolithic discipline. As the following diagram tries to show, at least four main variants, even of structuralist narratology, can be distinguished. I've got that on the handout, but it might be easier to follow it like this. In addition to the two well-known domains of structuralist narratology, that is, story-oriented narratology and discourse-oriented narratology, even classical narratology featured two other branches, that is, narrative semantics and rhetorical or pragmatic narratology. So you all know story-oriented narratology, or syntactic narrative theory, basically dealing with the what, with the elements that constitute a story, whereas discourse-oriented narratology is more concerned with the how, with the structure of narrative transmission, to use Seymour Chapman's well-known term. Let us now turn to the third section, to my very Teutonic attempt to provide models, to provide a meta-map of recent approaches in narrative theory. So let's try to take stock of the recent developments that we have witnessed in narratology, or arguably narratologies. I would now like to enlarge upon my earlier statement about the proliferation, the branching out of new kinds of approaches in post-classical narratology, the sheer number of which might make one rub one's eyes in astonishment. Given the plethora of new directions and approaches in narrative theory, it definitely looks as though narratology has not only survived the challenges of post-structuralism, of feminism and the new historicism, but has also developed in a number of very interesting new directions. As David Herman has shown in his overview of new directions in post-classical narratology, the development of narrative theory has recently been characterized by a proliferation of quite different approaches. Each of them moves, in its own way, from a description of textual phenomena to broader cultural questions, as well as to various contexts, and a growing concern with processes rather than with static products. What is more, narratologists have obviously begun to heed the Old Testament, since they have been tremendously fruitful and multiplied. Whether they have actually replenished the earth may be debatable, but there are currently more narratologies under the sun than ever before. With regard to some of these interdisciplinary marriages, one cannot quite help feeling that they are misalliances. And in some cases, the partners involved certainly make very strange bedfellows. Is there a word for that in French?
Strange bedfellow?
Misalliance, of course, is
misalliance, yes, okay. Yes.
But no word for strange bedfellows? Okay. Being denounced as formalist, as desperate narratologists, have obviously not been very particular about choosing new mates or bedfellows, as testified by the names of some of the new critical schools. Narratology's recent bunch of offspring include a wide range of approaches, many of which, at first glance, look like very curious hybrids. Leaving aside for the moment the question of whether the various new directions of narrative studies should actually be designated narratologies, I'll turn back to that question the last part of the paper, I've tried to provide a very provisional classification of the different kinds of new approaches in the form of the model or map that you have on the handout. For convenience's sake, and in order to pay due tribute to the narratologist's irresistible urge to systematize whatever domain or object he or she happens to be dealing with, I've arranged them in, what do we have on the handout? Six groups. Is that true?
Six.
Four things need to be emphasized, however, so as to remove possible sources of misunderstanding. Though it may go without saying, the tradition established by classical narratology of refining analytic concepts and applying them to the close scrutiny of text is continued by such eminent scholars as Dorrit Cohn, Seymour Chatman, Gérard Genette, Gerald Prince, James Phelan, Shlomit Raymond Kenan, Franz Stanzel, Monica Fludenig, the Hamburg group, and a whole lot of others. So classical narratology is not dead, despite what some people would like, I suppose. Second, there are no clear-cut boundaries between the six groups you have on the handout, or arguably even between approaches subsumed under one more or less artificial umbrella. Third, some of the narratologies listed on the handout represent mixed bags rather than clear-cut approaches. And fourth, the list does not, of course, pretend to offer an exhaustive, let alone a complete overview, neither as far as the approaches nor as far as the practitioners listed on the matrix are concerned, focusing instead on a broad range of new trends which bear directly on the topic at issue, that is, narratology or narratologies. Though I am aware of the many pitfalls of pigeonholing, the matrix you have on the handout tries to illustrate what has resulted from what Berry very aptly called, quote, narratology's centrifugal force. I think that's a very apt metaphor. Narratology has developed in a very centrifugal way, branching out in lots of different directions. Being a more or less clumsy attempt at descriptively mapping this proliferation of new approaches, the model presents a very schematic survey of what I think can be called the most important new directions in post-classical narratologies, and its application as well as of the names of some of their major proponents or practitioners of the respective trends or schools. You might want to note that down on the model, some of the approaches mentioned in the list have been fully elaborated. For instance, Monica Fludenig's very ambitious project of a natural narratology, or have already produced a very significant body of scholarly work, for instance, feminist narratology. The labels of some of the other narratologies, on the other hand, are merely the result of ad hoc coinages. Approaches that belong to the latter category, so those which are merely ad hoc coinages, are put in quotation marks. So quotation marks means this is an ad hoc coinage. Someone used the term, but it's not a fully elaborated approach and not a school which has developed a significant body of research. New narratologies that are fairly well established by now are printed in boldface. So feminist narratology or cognitive narratology or natural narratology, these are approaches that really have produced a significant body of work. In some cases, I have used single inverted commas in order to indicate that the labels I've used are merely provisional. And let me, last but not least, add that I present this latest version of this highly simplified matrix, which I've been tinkering with for more than 4 years, with utmost trepidation, being fully aware of the hazards of alienating just about everyone mentioned in the list, as well as everyone present, either for having been put into the wrong pigeonhole or having been left out. But still, a narratologist must systematize such a domain. And I think it's pointless just to talk about new narratologies as though there were 85. And I think it's always heuristically useful to group them in such a way. But still, we can discuss this after the paper. Most of the approaches listed under the heading contextualist, thematic, and ideological approaches, so that you can find it more easy to follow, contextualist and thematic narratologies are not really narratologies in that they are merely applications of narratological models and categories to specific texts. With the possible exception of feminist narratology, which has arguably contributed genuine narratological insights, shedding new light on what Prince called narrative qua narrative, most of the other contextualist, thematic, and ideological approaches have been concerned with issues that are not really germane to narratology. I should therefore like to suggest that mere applications should be distinguished from narratology proper, without hastening to add, however, that this distinction between narratology and narratological criticism is meant to be entirely value-free. So what James Phelan, for instance, does in his latest book, I think you have it on the bibliography, he was kind enough to send me a version of some of the chapters via attachment. It'll come out sometime this year. He calls it ethical and rhetorical narrative theory. It really doesn't have an awful lot to do with narratology in the classical sense. This is even more true of approaches like post-colonial narratology or new historical narratologies. People like Mark Curry use these terms, but I think one would be well advised not to call all of these approaches narratologies, but rather perhaps narratological criticism or criticism inspired by narratology. Let's turn to the second group, whether or not the same distinction applies to the second group, comparative and applied narratologies in literary and cultural studies, remains to be seen. I would venture the hypothesis that comparative and applied narratologies are once again narratological criticism rather than new schools of narratology. However, once we turn our attention to new genres like narratology and drama, or narratology and poetry, or new media, narratology and film studies, or what Werner Wolf, one of the most distinguished narratologists, he's von Stanzel's successor in Graz, has called the musicalization of fiction, I think once we turn our attention to new genres or new media, I would venture the hypothesis that we then enter very interesting territory. One might even venture the hypothesis that taking the media of manifestation of narrative and their different semiotic and expressive possibilities into account will exceed mere application, and that it may well lead to a significant rethinking of the domain and of the concepts of narratology. The as yet under-theorized, undevised, and unwritten narratologies of drama, of poetry, of visual narratives will not only test the validity and rigor of previously developed narratological models, but may well affect the models produced by narratology themselves, resulting not just in minor terminological modifications or elaborations, but in a revised narratology. Peter Huhn and Jörg Schönert have shown that very impressively for poetry, and so has Werner Wolf for the application of narratology to music, or the other way around, to the attempt to musicalize fiction. Also, the work that's been done in the field of narratology and visual arts by people like Mika Ball, Franziska Mostov, and Werner Wolf shows that we might really rethink the whole domain as well as the categories of narratology once we turn the media and the semiotic systems into consideration. Groups number 3 and 4, entitled Pragmatic and Rhetorical Narratology and Cognitive and Reception-Oriented Narratology, are yet a completely different cup of tea. They have shifted attention from the text to both the interplay between text and reader and the dynamics of the reading process. Once again, one might well distinguish between pragmatic and reader response narratology and between cognitive and natural narratology, yet I've decided to group them all together because they arguably have a number of similarities or something like a lowest common denominator. As I've said, they have shifted attention from the text to the reading process, to what goes on when readers try to, what Monica Fludener calls, naturalize texts. The approaches listed under this heading have resulted from fruitful encounters between traditional narratology and other theoretical schools, like rhetoric or reader response criticism, or even other disciplines like cognitive science. Pragmatic and rhetorical approaches are mainly interested in the interaction between textual speakers and narratorial and authorial audiences. Cognitive narratology, on the other hand, focuses on processing strategies, on interpretive strategies, or on inferences and interpretive choices. Having imported or assimilated various features and concepts like frame, scripts, preference rules from other disciplines, especially from cognitive science and from linguistics into narratology, cognitive and natural narratology actually constitute a hybrid kind of approach, emphasizing the interconnectedness between textual data and processing strategies. Personally, I regard this as a very significant new development, something that sets it off from traditional structuralist narratology. Approaches subsumed under what I've provisionally called postmodern and philosophical narratologies are yet again quite a different cup of tea. Let's first of all look at post-structuralist narratologies. I would prefer to call them deconstructions of narratologies because they really have quite different basic assumptions, quite different from narratology proper. These have originated from the attempt to subject narratological categories to critical scrutiny, emendation, and deconstruction. Perhaps I'm coming at this from the wrong angle, but the term postmodern narratology or post-structuralist narratology strike me as being so oxymoronic that one might well wonder whether they are not really a complete misnomer. In his well-known book Towards a Postmodern Theory of Narrative, Andrew Gibson, for instance, arguably throws out the narratological baby with the terminological bathwater when he simply substitutes new, very fanciful, and very suggestive terms for quite well-defined narratological concepts. Force, that's Rosset's term for form, inauguration, Michel Serre for representation, Hyman, Derrida for thematics, Cora, Kristeva, and dialogics, Bartim for voice, and Ion for event. I do not want to deny at all that Gibson is pursuing a very, very interesting project, but I really doubt whether it makes an awful lot of sense to call such deconstructions of the narratological enterprise post-structuralist narratology. They really do something which is quite distinct from narratology. Philosophical narratology, on the other hand, is once again the result of interdisciplinary marriages. The most important of these approaches is probably possible worlds theory, which in itself has developed into a number of very interesting directions. It would have to be the topic for quite a different lecture if I wanted to go into that. But still, it's one of the most significant new developments in narrative theory. The last group is certainly the most heterogeneous one, and one might even argue that it's not a group at all, consisting of an open list of interdisciplinary projects to the analysis of quite different kinds of narrative, projects that either draw on the insights of narratology or that have developed quite independently in other fields. They testify to the enormous amount of increase of interest in the central role that non-fictional narratives play in a variety of fields, ranging from conversational storytelling and oral history to the narratives of psychoanalysis and historiography. Other interdisciplinary narrative theories include those developed in artificial intelligence, anthropology, cognitive psychology and cognitive science, as well as historiography. Once again, each of these approaches would have to be the topic of quite a different lecture, and I'm incredibly interested in these interdisciplinary new developments, but I think, once again, it's arguably unjustified to call them all narratologies, because they have developed in quite different fields, in quite different disciplines, and people who pursue some of these projects, they don't even know what narratology is. So to call what, for instance, Philip Carrar or Robert Burkhoff or Anne Ridley in Utrecht, what these people are doing, to call that narratology, is really begging the question. What they are doing is devising narrativist theories of historiography. But what interests me so much is that there are all these people working in different fields, and they apparently don't know an awful lot about each other's work. And I very much believe in bridge building, in building bridges between people who pursue similar interests. And I think narratology can learn an awful lot from the narrativist theories of historiography, and arguably the other way around as well. It is an open question, however, whether this rise in both number and prominence of narratologies, let's just use the term for convenience sake, is a laudable or a lamentable development. Whereas many theorists emphasize the important gains to be derived from all these interdisciplinary projects and new approaches, other scholars are violently opposed to them. To theorists who have come out strongly against, say, interdisciplinarity or feminism, many of the new narratologies will look like strange theoretical bastards on whose hybrid nature even rigorous methodological nurture will never stick anyway. That's the Tempest. Well, I like including intertextual references. Some inveterate structuralist narratologists have also been very critical of such inter-theoretical alliances, suspecting that such cross-fertilizations will inevitably lead to contamination, ideological infiltration, and degeneration of narratology's real, that is, formless concerns. Other theorists, however, have expressed less jaundiced opinions, welcoming instead the fact that narratology has at last managed to move beyond structuralism. The controversy, to just give you one example, carried out between Susan Lanza, who inaugurated what has come to be known as feminist narratology, and Nili Dingot in the prestigious journal Style in the late 1980s, may serve to illustrate what is at stake here. Whereas structuralist narratologists like Dingot demand an objective account of the formal features of narratives uncontaminated by notions of cultural or historical influences or ideological relevance, proponents of a feminist narratology insist that such an endeavor, neutral description or poetics, is doomed to failure anyway. In contrast to classical narratology, which ignored the concept of gender, feminist narratology assumes that narrative structures and women's writing are determined by, quote Lanza, complex and changing conventions that are themselves produced in and by the relations of power that implicate writer, reader, and text, end of quote, and one might add, and critic and narrative theorist. Lanza's intention is, quote, to explore through specifically formal evidence the intersection of social identity and textual form, reading certain aspects of narrative voice as a critical locus of ideology, end of quote. So what she's trying to do is combining the analytical insights of classical narratology by using a category like voice with the insights of feminist criticism, with concepts like social identity or power structures. Being the staunch and uncompromising defender of structuralist strongholds that she apparently is, Dean Gott severely took Lanza to task for what she regarded as an irresponsible and dangerous surrender of narratology's true mission and genuine goals. Despite her heroic rearguard action, however, Dean Gott and other die-hard formalists have not been able to prevent feminist narratology and other cultural or historical new approaches in narrative theory from rapidly gaining ground, especially in the US. Recently, Lanza, that is Lanza 1995 and 1999, as well as 1992, has even daringly suggested possibilities for, quote, engendering or even for sexing narratology. This is bad business for structuralists. They don't want to be sexed. Though Lanza and other feminist narratologists have incurred the displeasure of those to whom this sounds suspiciously like an ideological balkanization of narratology, the new approaches that I've tried to give a brief overview over have raised pertinent new questions, which have proved to be of greater concern to a larger number of critics than the systematic taxonomies and typologies so dear to the hearts of classical narratologists. I've referred to the Susan Lanza versus Nili Dean Gott controversy, which has since been repeated in somewhat similar ways between Lanza and Gerald Prince, and more recently between John Bender and Dorrit Corn, at some length because it metonymically illustrates what is at stake in the ongoing debates about the directions into which narratology has been moving. Hardcore, that is, structuralist narratologists of the old school, are very skeptical about the new approaches, suspecting that they will inevitably lead to a contamination infecting neutral description and poetics with the ugly taint of ideology and even relativism. In contrast to the purists who want to make the world safe for narratology, as John Bender aptly put it, making the world safe for narratology, practitioners of the various post-classical narratologies intrepidly rush in where structuralists fear to tread. Whether or not they are fools in doing so may be an open question, but their work has certainly opened up productive lines of research. This short overview of recent developments in narrative theory may suffice to show that narratology has at last managed to leave the barren ground of structuralism and gone on to greener pastures. Let's now turn to section number 4, my attempt to critique the current proliferation of the term narratology. And let's make some modest proposals for its future usage. Whether or not it's really a very good idea to continue to refer to all of these approaches as new narratologies may well be more than just a moot question, especially in this context, since that term is inevitably fraught with so many, for many people, unfavorable connotations including structuralism, binarisms, abstraction, logocentrism, ahistoricism, and so on and so forth, that it is likely to put quite a number of people off who might otherwise display real interest in the questions raised by the new narratologies. One cannot fail to notice that, as I've stated right at the beginning, the term narratology is currently used in two completely different senses. Shlomit Rimon-Kinan, for instance, defines narratology in a very narrow sense as that branch of narrative theory that developed in the 60s and early 70s, mainly in France, largely under the aegis of structuralism and its formless progenitor, end of quote. By way of contrast, Herman uses the term quite broadly to refer to all those new narratologies. It may, however, be worth thinking about whether it might not be advisable to avoid the inevitable terminological confusion resulting from such completely different usages of the same term. I would like to suggest that one should differentiate more clearly between key terms like narrative studies, narrative theory, narratology, and narratological criticism. There are at least three reasons why it seems advisable not to use the terms narratology and narrative studies, or narratology and narrative theory for that matter, synonymously. First, narratology and narrative studies are not synonyms, the extension of the latter term being much greater than that of the former. I should like to suggest that one should use narrative studies as a generic term, as an umbrella term, as the English equivalent of the German term Erzählforschung, designating both all the different disciplines, approaches, and forms of criticism concerned with the study of narrative and narratives. Narrative studies could then be subdivided into narrative theory and analysis or interpretation of narratives, the latter being concerned with practical criticism, while the former is a theoretical activity. Making another modest proposal, I would suggest that narratology should be distinguished from narrative theory, being...
Could you just repeat that last
distinction
again?
Mm-hmm. Narrative studies could be subdivided into narrative theory, one branch, and analysis or interpretation of narratives, the other branch, the latter being concerned with practical criticism, while the former is a theoretical activity. And I think if we mix all of that up, it really leads to confusion. Theory versus criticism, both concerned with narratives, but going at it from a completely different angle. Making another modest proposal, I would suggest that narratology should be distinguished from narrative theory, being a particular form or branch of narrative theory, rather than narrative theory itself. Second, though the idea that narrative is ubiquitous in the contemporary world may well be a commonplace by now, there are many different ways of conceiving of and dealing with narratives. Many of the approaches in narrative theory that have been developed since the 1980s are obviously quite distinct from narratology in their orientation, methodology, and research goals. Given both the plethora of theoretical publications devoted to narrative in disciplines other than literary studies, that was the last model I showed you, and the fact that post-classical narratology has become an inherently interdisciplinary project, it seems sensible to use narrative theory as the umbrella term for theoretical work done on the forms and functions of narrative. So, narrative theory would be the umbrella term, the generic term, for all of those activities. Such a terminological move would allow us to differentiate between, say, anthropological narrative theories, historiographical narrative theories, philosophical narrative theories. As I've said before, these are not really narratologies. At least the people who do that kind of work, they, as yet, are not aware of being narratologists. Third, though all of the approaches subsumed under the wide umbrella of the term post-classical narratologies may well be equally concerned with narratives, some of them are arguably more equal, read more narratological, than others. Narratology, especially when prefixed with the adjective post-classical, is a highly ambiguous term, and it is by no means clear whether different people mean the same thing when they use it. The survey that I've given you of new kinds of directions and approaches in narrative theory may thus serve as a convenient mental map or as a foil against which the force fields and tensions between narratology proper and the various new post-classical incarnations can be gauged. Considering their similarities and differences, two things need to be emphasized. First, though all of these approaches are equally concerned with narratives, they differ in significant respects, both with regard to the degree of elaborateness with which they are consciously theorized and the degree of explicitness with which the underlying theoretical assumptions are set out. Second, with regard to broader cultural questions and contexts, some of the new approaches outlined are more equal, that is, more oriented towards genuine narratological concerns than others. So one might even put them on a graded scale as far as the degree of theorization and their narratological affiliations are concerned. There's a whole spectrum of possibilities. At the under-theorized pole, there are approaches like the investigations into narratives associated with the new historicism. So if you put them on a graded scale, I didn't put that on the transparency, it looks like this. A graded scale, at the under-theorized pole, you would have approaches like new historical narratologies. These aren't narratologies. This is narratological criticism, or even just criticism of narrative texts pursued within a new historicist framework without any theoretical concerns at all. Other really under-theorized approaches would include contextualist and thematic applications of narratological categories. Also, most of those postmodern narrative theories are not really heavily theorized. On the other hand, approaches like cognitive narratology, natural narratology, and possible worlds theory would be located at the other end of the scale, the pole which I suppose anyone but Germans would probably regard as over-theorized. In Germany, you cannot over-theorize anything. You would always be accused of having presented an under-theorized paper. No one would ever accuse you of over-theorizing anything. So approaches like cognitive narratology or natural narratology, I suppose anyone in his or her right mind would call them over-theorized. Occupying median points would be approaches like feminist narratology or ethical and rhetorical narratology. Though the actual position of a particular scholar's work or of a particular monograph, rather than the generic approaches I've used, of the generic labels on such an axis may vary quite a bit. In other words, feminist narratology is not per se less theorized than cognitive or rhetorical narratology, but the latter tend to be more explicitly and consciously theorized than most of the work done in feminist narratology that at least I have come across. Last but not least, I should like to suggest that it is desirable to clearly distinguish between narratology as a particular kind of narrative theory and the analysis and interpretation of narratives, though there's always been plenty of going and coming between the analysis of narrative and theoretical reflection, as John Peer has pointed out. When we turn our attention to the relationship between narratology, be it classical or post-classical, and the analysis and interpretation of narratives, it becomes obvious that narratology should not be confused with its mere applications, despite the fact that the latter, which may be termed narratological criticism, tends to be closely related to the former. On the one hand, interpretations of particular narratives are not independent of, but rather shaped by the narrative theories which the critic uses. We wouldn't have narratology without Proust's A la recherche du temps perdu, as you all know. On the other hand, the investigation of specific narratives tests the validity and also rigor of narratological categories and distinctions. More often than not, however, critics are babes in the woods when it comes to dealing with narratological problems, hardly, if ever, reflecting upon the categories they use. And this is not building up a straw man. If you read most of the criticism that's published, even in a very good journal like Narrative, it doesn't have anything to do with narratology. It's amazing how innocent you can are when you look at narrative texts, never having heard anything of narratology at all, but pursuing new historicist concerns, or feminist, or post-colonial, and so on and so forth. Many narratologists, on the other hand, I think in all fairness one should add that, tend to practice their own kind of ostrich policy. As a rule, either eschewing literary criticism altogether, or preferring to just theorize about narratives rather than actually analyze particular narratives. With their practitioners living in splendid isolation, the theoretical debates about the methodological problems involved in narratology, on the one hand, and the actual practice of interpreting narrative texts are often completely detached from one another, something that strikes me as being amazing. Nonetheless, instead of construing what I take to be artificial and even misleading oppositions between pure theory and pure interpretations, I should like to emphasize that the two are inevitably, inextricably intertwined, and that they can also mutually benefit from one another. I simply wouldn't know what to do with a narrative text if I hadn't been trained in narratology, and I'm always amazed what people can do with or to narrative texts, including projecting anachronic assumptions on texts which cannot even run away, and that amazes me a good deal. Last but not least, what follows from all these modest terminological proposals that I've made is that we might do well to use the term narratology with much more caution, and to critically review the current proliferation of ever more and new narratologies. I suppose it's due to the fact that narratology sells. And so if you have the option either of calling a book new approaches in something or other that nobody has ever heard of, or of calling it new narratologies, you are likely to choose new narratologies because it's a well-defined concept or approach. Though narratology has recently arisen as a phoenix from its ashes and become a dynamically evolving field, as David Herman observes, it seems doubtful whether all of those post-classical approaches that he mentions or that I've tried to give an overview of today really constitute new branches or even versions of narratology. Though many of the approaches listed on the matrix have already demonstrated that they can certainly enrich interpretation and literary history, illustrating the heuristic uses and usefulness of the narratological toolkit, not all of them arguably fall within the purview of narratology. In contrast to Monika Fludenich, who maintains, quote, that almost each of these critical schools, that is deconstruction, the new historicism, post-colonial theory, can now boast of its own narratology, end of quote, I would argue that most of those approaches in question are either mere applications of narratological concepts, that is what I call narratological criticism, or so far removed from narratological research goals and methodological premises as to be virtually incompatible with narratology. Moreover, in contrast to narratology, which is neutral in that regard, most of these schools subscribe to a particular theory of interpretation, and narratology has never done that. Tom Kind and Hans-Harald Wöller have published two brilliant papers on that subject about the differences between approaches which are neutral as far as the theory of interpretation are concerned and approaches which are not neutral as far as the underlying theory of interpretation is concerned. I think this is a very important and valid distinction. So though I'm all in favor of the move toward integration and synthesis that David Herman has called for and even championed by many other proponents of the post-classical approaches, I doubt whether anyone stands to gain anything by disregarding unbridgeable differences between the various new approaches and by accepting at face value that it makes sense to subsume all of the new branches of narrative studies under the arguably all too wide umbrella of narratology. The concomitant terminological and conceptual erosions might even lead to the demise of narratology as a discipline. Nonetheless, even the new phase of post-classical narratology arguably features a couple of branches, though not nearly as many as may be suggested by my earlier survey of the field. On a gliding scale between the poles of narrative theory and analysis of narratives, you've got that on the handout, the very first model. It should have been printed at the on the last page because it sums it all up, as it were. On such a gliding scale, the branch designated feminist narratology would occupy a median point, whereas cognitive narratology is to be situated on the far side of narrative theory, having originated from an alliance between cognitive science, reception theory, and narratology. The matrix, or the final model you have on the handout, provides a very schematic summary of my modest terminological proposals, trying to map the relations between the key terms and domains of narrative studies, narrative theory, narratology, and narratological criticism. In short, I'm not at all sure whether the discipline is really well served by the ongoing proliferation of ever more and ever new narratologies. Though they have the merit of raising new and very interesting issues, it seems doubtful whether they really have all that much in common with narratology, since many of the new approaches can be faulted both for being insufficiently theorized and for their lack of methodological rigor and systematicity. They arguably lack the very features which are generally taken to be the defining characteristics of narratology. To designate all of the new directions of research in post-classical narrative theory as narratology is arguably both counterproductive and meaningless, since it would empty the term of whatever meaning it may have had in the first place. My time is about up, but let me just provide a very short, albeit inconclusive, conclusion. I've argued that if we are to make sense of the relationship between narratology and the wide range of new and so-called new post-classical narratology, and of the ongoing debates about the status of narratology at all, we would be wise to begin by looking at the plethora of new approaches that have been developed and look at the underlying theoretical frameworks that inform the various practices of either doing narratology, or rather narrative theory, or of doing narratological criticism, or just interpretation of specific narratives. Moreover, I've argued that postulating a dichotomy between monolithic entities designated traditional narratology and post-classical narratologies begs the question, because what we are actually faced with is a broad range of, in many cases, hybrid practices and approaches which occupy various spaces in between that deserve to be mapped much more carefully. A higher degree of theoretical self-awareness is not only necessary for the development of more sophisticated narrative theories, it is also prerequisite for gauging the force fields and tensions between narratology and the various new post-classical approaches that I've tried to identify and map. So long as the theoretical foundations of many of those post-classical approaches remain as shaky as they arguably are, attempts at integrating them into a general theory of narrative, or let alone into narratology, will either encounter serious obstacles or be in vain. Last but not least, I've suggested that it is not only useful, but necessary to distinguish as clearly as possible between narrative theory, narratology, narratological criticism, and other and quite different kinds of analyses or interpretation of narratives. Once we do so, we realize that not all of the enterprises that sail under the banner of post-classical narratologies actually pertain to narratology at all, sharing neither its research goals nor its methodologies. though all of these theses would, of course, need a substantial fleshing out, not possible in the context of one lecture, and though this paper yields no real conclusions, positivistic or otherwise, it may at least suffice to show that narratology is no longer what it allegedly used to be, and that it has developed into a flourishing and highly diversified field, branching out in many interesting directions and managing to keep almost as many professors busy as James Joyce. I've offered these Teutonic hypotheses as a means to sketch a map, if yet in rough outline, at least in greater detail than previous users of the term narratology have displayed, the varied landscape of theories and practices of narrative studies. My models, maps, and theses are not, however, meant to be the last word on any of these complex subjects, but rather one of the first words on the reconceptualization of the relationship between traditional narratology and the wide field of new approaches. Many of the latter, I should like to reiterate, arguably deserve to be rechristened because their applications of narratology are interpretations informed by other literary or cultural theories. So what I've done, to quote Frederick Jameson, is I've proposed a model which is worth what it's worth and must now take its chances independently. But it is the construction of such a model that is ultimately the fascinating matter, and I hope it will not be taken as a knee-jerk affirmation of pluralism if I say that alternate constructions are desirable and welcome, since the grasping of the present from within is the most problematical task the mind can face, end of quote. It is impossible to predict in which directions narratology or the new narratologies will actually develop, but time will tell. The future is uncertain, but it will be interesting to watch, and even more interesting to make modest proposals for terminological distinctions and modest attempts to intervene. Thank you very much for your attention.
Mapping out the landscape of narratology or narratologies, which has taken on so many new forms, over the years. I was particularly struck by a number of things that you said. That I think that you quoted from David Herman. You said that the narratology has survived post-structuralism, and that was at the time, particularly in Anglo-American criticism, I think that narratology kind of died as opposed to structuralism. But now since then that these plethora of narratologies have developed.
It's really gaining ground fast. The bibliography I put together for you on the handout, this is just so highly selective. The bibliography we have at the Giessen Graduate School probably runs to about 10 times as long. And I could have asked Manfred Jahn or David Herman, and we might have tapped resources, and it would then have run to something like 500 pages. It really is amazing what kind of renaissance narratology has seen over the last couple of, say, years. And I'm not even aware, did I put on the Routledge Encyclopedia of Narrative Theory?
I don't know. It would have to be. It's
coming out in 2005, another fascinating project. But I think it's significant. Manfred Jahn or David Herman would have to be the editor. No, I haven't put it on.
Yes, well, we know that.
Okay, fine.
A number of us have contributed, including Francis Bethlow and John Ray Sheffer.
So please, questions. Yes. Ask them in German or in English. If you're perfectly free to ask them in French as well. But then Jack Pierre would have to translate. I love questions. And I'm almost okay again, because about half an hour before the lecture started, I thought I might just as well not drop dead, but fall down any second. But apparently giving lectures is very healthy. So, questions?
I would have a quite naive question. I'm very impressed by the map you gave up. You gave us about the selective surveys of new narratologies. I would ask a question about the first part, what you call contextualist and thematic narratologies. It seems to me that every parting of the world can be considered, can intervene into narratology. For instance, you present a Marxist narratology, so there could be a religious narratology. You point out a feminist narratology, and we had actually a conference about that last year by Sylvie Durer, and it seems a quite important topic. So I was asking myself, could exist something like a gay narratology, for instance?
As I said, I've been tinkering with this model for about 4 years now, and I'm not even sure whether it actually is the latest version, because every time you read an article, you think, well, is this a new kind of narratology? And in fact, you are right. Monica Fludenig, in her survey, includes gay and lesbian narratology.
Yeah.
And I simply haven't seen
black and white.
I haven't seen enough important work. And as I've tried to make clear in the paper, I disagree with Monica that all of these approaches should really be called narratologies. I quoted her saying, well, every important critical school has developed its own narratology. I think it would be a good idea to rephrase that. There are certain schools which turn their attention to narrative texts, but they don't have anything to do with narratology. So we have gay and lesbian criticism, and of course they also spend quite some time analyzing narrative texts, but this doesn't turn it into gay and lesbian narratology. So that's where I would agree to disagree with Monica.
But maybe part of the problem is the fact you put in the same basket contextualist and thematic. Mm-hmm. And those kind of matters can be approached in both ways, either contextualist or thematic.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the thematic approaches argue within a contextualist framework, because what all of these people are interested in is looking at ideological themes of narratives and then relating those to some context or other. That's why I decided to put thematic and contextualist together.
I think they have to do with each other, but you can separate them too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question about that.
Yeah.
For a while, I had divided them into 8 or 9 or 10 groups, but it turned
out that
it was no longer possible to put it on one piece of paper. And for the purposes of giving lectures, I thought, 6 groups, 1 piece of paper, that's it. But my wife and I have edited 2 volumes of essays called, you've got them on page 2, Neue Ansätze in der Erzähltheorie, New Approaches in Narrative Theory, and Erzähltheorie Transgenerisch Intermedial Interdisziplinär, that's narrative theory in a transgeneric, intermedial, and interdisciplinary framework. In the introductory articles to those 2 volumes, we've provided a much more elaborate overview.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the
brief
version. But I really find it fascinating to see what all these different